Why Personal Relationships Take Work, the second talk in a series titled Understanding Love, Sex, and Marriage, was presented by Larry Barber on October 8, 2002, at an evening class of McKinsey Study Center, an institute of Gutenberg College. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2012. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved. A brief break occurs in the middle of the following recording. It is the result of the original audio tape switching to the second side.
Okay, let's start. This is a two-semester series on marriage, relationships, and sexuality. And Jack asked me to talk about why relationships are so much work. And an answer, because we're really messed up. And I'm going to kind of explain all the ways that we're really messed up. So, some of you have probably heard me talk before. This is a model that my wife and I have worked on for a number of years to help people understand relationships and how they work. And there's a parts of it up here. You can see that on your handout. But I'm only going to talk about this part down here, which I call the map. And basically, our map is this thing that we carry around with us that we use all the time without even thinking about it. A lot of it's some of it's conscious, some of it is unconscious. But a map, our map is what we use to navigate and negotiate life and relationships. It's what we bring with it. It kind of acts as a filter. And we take all of it, we use it as a filter to interpret what happens to us, what we experience outside of us, goes through us, and then we interpret and then we respond. So I'm going to talk about our map tonight, and I hope it'll become increasingly evident why relationships are so much work, why they're so hard. So basically, our map is who we are. It's what we bring with us to relationships or interactions. Again, it's kind of the grid or the lens that we look through to interpret, to assimilate information and sort of experiences on the fly. So let me talk about that. I have our map. I have changed this model since the last time that I talked about that. And I've broken it up into two different parts. There's what I call the developed part, and then there's the innate. The developed part is basically what happens from birth on. And the innate part is the part that's hardwired into us. It's the way that we are created. And so let me start with this innate part, the part that's hardwired. The Bible says that you and I are created in God's image. And what that means is that there are ways in which you and I are like God, similar. And let me talk about that. We are essentially spiritual beings. That means that there's more to us than just the flesh that hangs on our bones, that our core being is spiritual, immaterial. It means that we are rational beings. We have this incredible ability, to process information on a variety of levels simultaneously and draw conclusions. We have this incredible need to make sense of things that we don't understand. We want to understand. And God has hardwired into us this not only the ability, but the need for that, to make sense out of things. We are emotional beings. We can experience a wide range of emotions, from joy to sadness to fear, anxiety, all kinds of emotions. We're emotional. We have a will. That is, we are decision makers. We have the ability to choose, which is a phenomenal thing. Let me back up for just a second about this part of that we are rational. We are unlike any other created being or thing in this ability to make sense out of things. We are relational. God has created us with a need for a relationship. We're creative. I mean, this is an art gallery, and we've seen some of the amazing ways in which people express their creativity. Everywhere you look, people are expressing some way that's creative, that is innate in them. Lots and lots of ways that people are expressive and creative. So we are also created as finite beings who are dependent, which is kind of a hard thing. Okay, any questions about this part here so far, imageness, being created in God's image and what that means? While we are the best of God's creation, we are His handiwork, we are also broken. And the Bible talks about how, first of all, that we're sinners and that we're evil. That's a hard thing to hear. It's a hard thing to take in, and it's a hard thing to think about. It's one thing to say, well, I know I'm a sinner. It's another thing to say that I'm evil. We tend to think of people who are evil who are out there, people like Hitler and people like that. But the Bible's very clear on the fact that you and I are not only sinners, but we're evil. And let me explain that. They talk about being a sinner first. Basically, a sinner is a person who's not perfectly righteous. It's a person who misses the mark, is the Greek term for it, or the meaning of the Greek term. And in real life, what that means is that you and I have this disease of our will that prevents us from being morally perfect people, and we hurt each other. We hurt ourselves and we hurt each other all the time. And Romans 7, I believe, is when Paul talks about doing the very thing that he doesn't want to do and not doing the very thing he wants to do, he's talking about the fact that sin is such a big issue that it's bigger than his conscious choices. It's a huge thing. It's not a small thing. The Bible also says that we're evil. And when I say, or when I think, when the Bible talks about evil, I think it means that you and I have a problem with reality. Romans 1 talks about how when mankind rejected God, God gave man over to iniquity. And he looks at that in two areas. One is a depraved mind and degrading passions. So we are people who think wrong and who judge wrong. And we are people who want the wrong things. Genesis 3 talks about God's conclusion or description of mankind after the fall is that he has become like one of us, good at knowing good and evil. What that means, I think, is that we have put ourselves in God's place, and we want to decide what's right and what's wrong for ourselves. So we refuse and reject and rebel against God's definition of what's good and what's not good, and we put ourselves in the position to say what's good for ourselves or what's not good. Our culture, I think, is particularly adept at that and sophisticated at that. I think probably because of the media and just the information age that we live in, we're bombarded by examples of people changing and reframing, calling good evil and calling evil good. Some good examples would be, we call homosexuality diversity. Another good example is we call abortion free choice. So those are ways of actually reframing something that is in fact evil and calling it good. I think our culture, again, is particularly adept at it. And for us as Christians, I think it's very important that we have God's perspective, that we think about things. Our worldview is very important so that we can discern and really see things for what they are. Okay, so that covers brokenness and evil and sin. So we're people that have a hard time with reality. We don't like it. We change it. We call it other things. We're also sexual beings. God has created us male and female. He's created a marriage relationship for that need and that for that expression. I don't know if Jack talked about this last week. I wasn't here, but our sexuality is sort of a language that God has given people who are married as a way, a language of expressing commitment or expressing openness and vulnerability. As Christians, we are also people who have the Spirit of God inside of us. And my understanding of the Scriptures is that the primary function of the Holy Spirit is to persuade you and I of what's true. So over and against this part of us that has a hard time with reality, we have the Spirit of God who is persuading us of what's truth, in direct contrast to that. Okay? Any questions so far about this part here? You guys all get this, right? Okay, part of, as I mentioned before, I divided this into two parts, the innate and what's developed. Sort of on the line halfway in between is what I call personality. People are born with a personality, but also personality is developed. Personality gets developed by the fact that we make choices, and those choices that we make actually have impact on us and who we become and how we think about ourselves. So let me talk about this top part now, and then what I'm going to do is talk about how it works and gets in the way and give some examples, and we'll go from there. This part of our map is what I call is the developed part, and this is the part that we kind of grow into, that happens over the course of our life. Each of us have life experiences, and those life experiences affect us. They kind of go into the computer and have a lot to do with, I'll talk about this in a minute, about our worldview and what I call our fears and beliefs. We also live in a culture that influences. It influences how we think, how we see reality. There's lots of different cultures, and our culture is very different than, say, a European culture or an Asian culture. And that certainly affects how we think and what we think is good or not good. Life experiences, we all have life experiences, and those kind of go into the computer, and they affect what I call our worldview and our fears and beliefs. Our worldview is basically what we think about the world. That is, the world outside of me, and how it works, what I think is true, what I think the Bible is saying, for example, what I think is true about relationships, that kind of stuff. But it's the external world outside me is my worldview. My fears and beliefs are the internal world that I carry around with me. Let me give you a couple examples of that. I grew up in my father was a career Marine Corps pilot. It was yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. There was absolutely no gray. I had a job to do. Let me give you a couple examples. Every other week I was taken out back, sat on a trash can, and my head was shaved, Marine Corps style. And there was no, I don't like that, I don't want that. It was just the way it was. And so I came to believe that I did not have a voice, that what I had to say didn't matter, because it wouldn't have done any good. And that's one of the beliefs that I came to have about myself, is that I didn't have a voice. I was joking, we were introducing ourselves to the Gutenberg students here a couple weeks ago, and I joked about having been in the Marine Corps 18 years, I joined the Navy. And every day that my father was home, we had a chore to do, and it was inspected. And if it was done right, there was sort of silence, like it was expected. But if it was done wrong, my father got very angry, and I had to do the whole thing over again. It wasn't just fix the little, the dirty spot behind on the backside of the toilet. It was do the whole thing over again, and he got very angry. And also, my father was gone a lot, fighting wars, and my mother was left to raise five children. So my mom used anger a lot to control us and to sort of get some control of what was going on. So I learned with my parents' anger that I was responsible for people, how people reacted and what they felt. So I came away from those experiences believing, it was sort of a weird thing because on one hand I didn't feel very powerful, but I believed that I was responsible for my parents' feelings or how they responded. I mean, if you think about that, that's a lot of power. But it certainly didn't, I didn't experience it that way. So like I could make my parents, I don't know that I could make them happy, but I certainly, if I did it good enough, then I could keep them from being angry. And so keeping people happy is one of the things that I've had to work with for a good part of my life. As a counselor, oftentimes you have to say things, or if you're going to really care about people, you're going to say things that people are going to get upset with. I mean, if you're doing the work that you're supposed to do to care about them, there's a good chance that they could get upset with you. And one of the things I discovered early on in my counseling and sitting in front of a supervisor was that it mattered to me how people responded to me, and that played a part in how I interacted with them. And I had to make a decision about whether I was going to work with that or whether I was going to not be a counselor or be a counselor. But it's those kinds of beliefs that we all carry around with us that are working all the time. And particularly when we get in context that are similar to contexts in the past or contexts that are uncomfortable, those kinds of issues can come up, or those kinds of beliefs can play themselves out in your relationships with other people. Okay? Is that making sense so far? Let me talk a little bit about, any questions so far about this part, this thing here? Sure.
Before you go on, I see what you're getting at with developed in me and A. However, there is a crossover. Your life expectancy, cultural background, etc., would have quite an effect on how you express your brokenness, your sin, and evil.
Absolutely.
Is there anything you could elaborate there that would help this?
Well, this is all dynamic. I don't want to intend to say that this is exhaustive. I've tried to think about it a lot, but this is a very dynamic thing, and they all play a part and affect all these other parts. So it looks very structured, drawn on the board here, but it's all they play off each other all the time. One of the big debates, well, I wouldn't say this is a huge debate, but one of the discussions that Jack and I have had is whether a person can sin just to sin, separate from all this stuff. And so that's one of the ongoing discussions that we have here. So, but it's all, they're all mixed up.
Okay.
Under the fears, Mary.
Oh, sorry. You have to help.
Under the fears and beliefs part,
yes.
It seems like fears are negative and beliefs are maybe a positive way of saying something. It seems like two sides of the same coin.
I don't think necessarily. I mean, I call them fears and beliefs because I think it can include both of them. Let me think about that. I never thought about it that way, but I didn't intend to communicate that.
Okay.
Let me take that from you. Let's talk a minute about beliefs. I asked Nancy earlier, I don't remember if I asked you guys, can you guys think of some beliefs or fears or anybody else that they have that they're aware of? One of the things I learned as doing chores all the time was that as hard as I might try to do it right, I didn't quite get it. I wasn't quite ever good enough. So that's one of the beliefs I have. I have a pretty great work ethic as a result, always trying to do it right. And I've had a belief for a long time that if I really worked hard, if I was kind and respectful and worked hard, that people ought to respond in a particular way to me. But I realized some time ago that that was my stuff. It was my fantasy. And it was just what I hoped for. And it's not true, because I'm a fallen person and I relate to fallen people, and we live in a fallen world. And people don't just, they don't do what you want them to do. You guys think of some beliefs?
I think with the whole beliefs thing, you hit it right on the head about I can't do it good enough. You know,
yeah.
It's never good enough. But
yeah.
With me, I just wonder if other people deal with this too. I'm sure they do. But I kind of go both ways. With some things, I do my absolute best. And, you know, I got to get it perfect. But other things, I just go, you know what? It doesn't matter how hard I try. So forget it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Do you have any comments on
that? I'm not going to do it good enough.
Yeah. So why bother?
Well, I think we learned that from people hurting us, from being rejected. And so we come away from those kind of experiences with that those kinds of beliefs. That's a great example of life experiences and how those fears and beliefs get developed. And we bring, these life experiences start pretty early, and then we start developing these things. And as we make decisions based on these fears and beliefs, they're actually reinforced by the choices we make and then the experiences we make. Tucker.
Two things. I think one is that there's a lot of beliefs that we have regarding the issue of security.
Right. Yes, there is.
You know, a big one would be feeling secure in this world regarding issues of money, or anything that makes one feel like, okay, you know, my life in some kind of material way is well organized and well put together, so I don't have to worry about a whole bunch of things.
Yeah,
and that's where my security is going to come from.
Sure.
The other thing I think is that. We have a lot of beliefs about what we think we need to do in order to get other people to do what we want.
Yes.
Whether that be to be kind of over the top and be big and be kind of
right.
Angry, or whether we go the opposite direction and we do more of a guilt trip or
compliant passive person,
all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And I think those kind of beliefs come out of the idea that people aren't going to give me what I want unless I do, you know, one of these kinds of things. And the thing that I would say about that is I think that when you're talking about beliefs, it seems to me that a lot of times you're talking about beliefs that are very, very deep.
Yes.
That we can bring them through life experience or talking with people or counseling up to the surface and kind of consciously deal with them, but usually, most of the time, they're working at a very unconscious or subconscious
level. That's true. That's very true. We also have lots of beliefs about what we believe about what constitutes failure, what constitutes success.
Mentioned something that I struggle with regards to my beliefs and how they've been formed by my interactions with other people and how that plays a very big role in the relationship that I have with God. And erroneous thinking about, you know, who I am in Him and who He is in me. And it kind of chokes my faith sometimes. So I don't know if anyone else can see that.
I was just thinking about the whole belief thing and also in relation to worldview, and at first I was going to say that my father tends to believe that he and I have one or the other worldview, he believes that, you know, the world is not a dangerous place, and that things will work out in the end. And honestly, even though he's a non-Christian, it sometimes irks me because he's the one who talks to me about faith.
Yeah.
And then he thinks that I'm very fearful.
Yeah.
And that I see the world as a dangerous place.
Right.
And that, you know, things aren't going to work out for me.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that's true. But then I was thinking, how much of what he believes do I really believe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much of his beliefs have been just sort of pressed on me like a mask?
Yes. Yeah.
How much of what he says is what I really believe?
Yeah.
So, you know, beliefs are instilled by their parents.
Sure.
By the parents. And sometimes it's hard to sort out what somebody really believes as opposed to what they've been taught.
Exactly. That's very true. Yeah, our parents play a big role in the development of our beliefs and with our experiences with them. You guys have any beliefs you think would be helpful to talk about?
Since you mentioned parents.
Sure.
I think it's, you know, for the people that come from a home where one or the other parents has left.
Yes.
The belief that's internalized is when I get close to people, they leave.
Yes.
And so we carry that into every relationship we're ever in.
That's a good point.
Until that belief is healed.
Or until we take it on and challenge it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Otherwise it... And then, like you said, it self-perpetuates because we have a cushion. We only let people so close.
Yeah.
And then that's self-perpetuating.
Yes. Yeah.
Or another one would be, for those of us that had real independent families and raised ourselves, a belief that I would have formed or that I formed was that I can't really depend on support from other people because I always have to rely on myself. So kind of a different angle.
Yep. Good. Okay, let me talk about a little bit about how this works. Let me talk first of all about this part here. This is Christine and this is Larry. Whenever people interact with each other, there's always two levels going on simultaneously. It's what I call the what and the how. The what are the subjects that people talk about, the content, the words, and what those words literally mean, the information that is exchanged. That's the what. The how is body language, posture, facial expressions, how fast I talk, how slow I talk, how loud I talk, how quiet I talk. That's the how. How big I get, how small I get, that's the how. This whole combination of the how and the what together is what mental health people call process. It's what happens when people interact with each other. 7 to 10% of what goes on between people happens on a content level. 90 to 93% of when people interact with each other happens on a how level. So what that means is that our relationships, content and what is important, but how is very important. And how is a part of where all this mat stuff comes out, expresses itself. So let's say, this is all hypothetical, okay? You guys got that, right? Okay, so here I am. And this is really important. This is not about the chicken or the egg. From my perspective, counseling is not about blaming somebody for doing something. Counseling is about, understanding my map is not about, coming to an understanding of my map is not about blaming somebody because they did something to me. Understanding my map is about me looking at what's happened and understanding my beliefs, understanding the choices that I've made so that I can be responsible for myself and trust God with what He's given me. Does that make sense? Is that clear? So I'm not into this let's blame our parents thing. It's about me learning about what God has given me, what I believe, what's really true, and taking responsibility for that and working with that as I as God puts me in relationships and I have to interact with people and trying to be responsible with that. That's the benefit of trying to understand what I bring to the table here, or what I bring to a relationship, what I personally bring to my relationship with my wife, or Andrew, or Paul, or Nancy. So that's the point of understanding my map. So here I am. This is my grid. This is what I use to interpret life, to navigate, to negotiate relationships. With all these, some of these beliefs you all talked about, and Andrew talked about, and Paul talked about, here I am. So here's my wife, and I experience her. And I don't know any of you who know my wife, but my wife is a pretty amazing person. Very complex. When my wife self-protects, she can get pretty big. She can be big, okay? Now, this is all hypothetical. And with my map, what I tend to do is try to make people happy, right? Because I don't like people being angry with me, right? So I either, maybe I might comply, or I might check out, leave. That's what I'm best at. So here's my wife. She's interpreting and taking through her filter my compliance or my indifference or my leaving. And let's say for a moment, let's talk about how these fears and beliefs get reinforced. Let's say if my belief is, I have a belief about closeness or intimacy, and I believe if you get close, you get hurt. So the way that I protect myself or the way that I respond to that belief is I move away from people. Okay? So where am I? If I want a relationship with Nancy and I'm over here, what happens? I'm alone. And my belief about people not loving me gets reinforced. Does that make sense? So I have to, the way to, that I work with that is I try to, first of all, understand who I am and what I'm working with, and that's a lifelong process. And I try to understand what my beliefs are. I can look at my behavior and I go, what did I want from that? And by asking that question, I can say, okay, there's some belief there. There's some belief behind that decision of moving away. What is that belief? How did I come to believe that? How did I come to learn that? Is that true now in my relationship with Nancy? Is that true now in my relationship with my wife? And I have to make a decision there. Is it true or not? Or am I going to be a loving person? What am I going to do? That's how those kinds of questions and decisions are how I work with that, and it's how I trust God. Is that making sense? Okay. So to answer the question that Jack wanted me to deal with, why are relationships so much work, or why are they so hard? It's because I brought all this with me. And I bring it to every single relationship that I have. And relationships get messy because of this. They're hard. And we hurt each other. We hurt ourselves. We don't like reality. We redefine reality. And we actually get in the way of ourselves. We sabotage ourselves all the time. And relationships are one of the tools, one of the contexts that God provides mirrors for us to see ourselves and understand ourselves and confront us with our sin and our lack of faith. And so it's a kind of a school where God grows us up. That's the good part of it. But what makes them so hard is that we bring all this stuff with us. So, panel. Any questions? If you'd like to. You need a microphone. So the panel's going to ask questions now or make some statements or comments, and you can benefit from this. Oh, the panel. Why don't you guys stand up for a second? I'll introduce you. That's what you want. You want to be introduced, right? This is Nancy Scott. Nancy is on staff here at Gutenberg. Nancy is also a marriage and family therapist. You've been doing it for about 5 years now? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Wow. And Nancy and I actually work together with some couples. And Nancy is an excellent counselor. You're welcome. Paul is a good friend, and Paul was an attorney turned counselor, recent counselor, and you work mostly with college-age kids, is that right?
I've worked with a lot, individuals and couples as well.
Okay. Paul's a good guy. We're going to go hunting this weekend. He's an excellent hunter. And this is Andrew Robinson. Andrew just recently completed his master's degree in marriage and family therapy and works with CAFA, which is Christians Against Family. I'm sorry?
Addressing Family Abuse.
Christians Addressing Family Abuse, yes. Andrew actually kind of has an expertise of working with kids, adolescents and younger. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole gamut.
The whole gamut, okay. So they're going to ask some questions. And or sure, or you can ask them questions, or they can make statements. So if you want to say something or ask a question or whatever, anything's fine.
I was thinking maybe you could say something about the way your response to what Christine does reinforces then what she does and kind of how that works together.
Okay. Well, I'm working from a belief that somehow not only am I responsible for intellectually I know that this isn't true, that I'm not responsible for anybody else's response, but on some level I still have to work with that, especially when someone's angry with me or I think they're going to be angry with me. I can real quickly take that on. I can act like somehow it was my responsibility to prevent, to do, have done something so that they wouldn't have been angry with me. So I take, not only do I take on the idea that I could have prevented it, I take on that I'm responsible for their reaction. So I'm kind of on both sides of it. Does that make sense? So if I think Christine is angry, whether maybe she isn't or not, I can kick right into trying to figure out what I need to do, what I did wrong. I can get defensive and try to explain to her that it's not my fault. But it's all based on this belief that that I'm responsible or I could have prevented it somehow. And so I can actually kick into a number of ways. I can kick into being indifferent or compliant, or I can get big as well. And let's say I kick into indifference at this point. My belief about indifference is if I can get out of the way, maybe there'll be less damage or somehow. But if you're Christine and we're in a relationship and I'm going over here as fast as I can, at least emotionally, I've reinforced my belief that I'm alone or that I'm responsible by, because I've never actually confronted it. I never actually just said, what's going on, or what are you responding to, or I never even take the opportunity to talk to Christine about how she's responding to me at this point.
You haven't checked it out.
I haven't checked it out,
to
right.
To see what really was
right.
going on for her.
Right. Is that kind of the question you were asking?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you can see how complicated relationships can get, because I have a whole set of my map is my map, and I have a whole set of beliefs and fears and my worldview and life experiences, and I've responded to those experiences very differently than Christine has over time. And Christine has her whole set of fears and beliefs and life experiences, and she's responded to those. And so as we interact with each other, we have an opportunity to work that out. But that's very hard work. And oftentimes we can sabotage that and get in the way of really caring about each other What's fortunate is that oftentimes when there is conflict, or I might be indifferent, or Christine can be intimidating, those are moments where we can actually look at our behavior and ask ourselves those questions. What did I want from this? What do I believe about what I just did? And start exploring and understanding those beliefs or those that we are actually responding to. Does that make sense? Paul?
Some initial thoughts that I just have. One of the things I really like about your approach is it seems like so often in conflict resolution, we focus on fixing things right away.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're really backdooring it. Instead, you're focusing on myself, my actions as an individual, whether I'm being hurtful, whether I'm being selfish, whether I'm being contemptuous, whether I'm being rude, as opposed and focusing on that and the type of person I want to be before God, and whether I want to be a loving person, whether I want to grow as an individual. And it just seems, I like that approach, because then it seems like as you focus on yourself, it seems like the problem tends to resolve itself more easy, because you've decreased a lot of the pressure that you're really entering an argument into, that you're approaching an argument with. Instead of being having all that intensity and anger, you've resolved a lot of that, and you're more willing to allow for somebody else's sinfulness as well. Can you kind of elaborate?
Yeah, I think
that?
You're right. Absolutely. I think that's you've correctly assessed that. I think. I think. My experience in working with couples, and I do a lot of work with couples, is that the biggest problem is that people come in and the problem is her. It's not me. If she would just change, everything would be okay. And then she's be saying the same thing. And that is the worst trap that people can get into. And I genuinely believe that the Bible talks about taking personal responsibility for myself and my choices. I mean, it's implied all the time, and it certainly is explicit in some ways. But I'm really addressing the question of who do I want to be? What kind of person do I want to be? And I can't. God has given me Christine, and who she is, all her life experiences, all her beliefs, and all that. And that's who he has given me to respond to in a loving way. And I'm responsible for that. She's not. She's not responsible for how I respond. And that's what God has given me to grow me up. And it's
worked with is, like, picking up on what you said, they're always the problem.
Yeah.
And the more you talk through it and observe it, the more you see they've got their spouse confused with someone else.
Yes.
That's part of their life experiences and culture.
And then sometimes in therapy they get you confused with somebody else. And that's part of the deal.
Yes. I was hoping you could take that and then go a step further and talk some about what it looks like in that context, that relational context, to trust God. You talked a little bit about it earlier, but what does that actually mean?
Well, I think what it looks like is that when I find myself reacting to anybody, any conflict, or my Christine or you or anybody, that I am willing to take a look at that and look at what is my beliefs about that, my reaction, or what did I want from that? And I do that work, and I try to understand my map. And I think that's the process of trusting God. Rather than continuing to define you as the problem, I step back and look at my reaction and are trying to take responsibility for that and look at what my beliefs are about my behavior. And that's the work, I think, of trusting God. Does that make sense? Because that's not easy work. There's one other point I wanted to make, and part of what makes relationships hard work is because, number one, we're sinners, and we hurt each other, and that's hard in and of itself. Then the kind of work that I'm talking about is this work of taking responsibility for yourself and understanding what it is that's inside of you that you're reacting to when you run into somebody, that's hard work too. And that's what makes relationships so hard. And I can't tell you how many times I've said to couples when they come in and they start doing this thing, I go, look, there's no good guys and there's no bad guys. And they go, yeah. And they don't, but they don't believe it. And they don't, certainly don't act that way towards each other. And they really do. We're into this, I'm a victim, you're the bad guy kind of thing.
Let me make a sense. Okay, go ahead.
So the way that I trust God is to not buy the lie that I'm a victim, that I make choices and that I'm responsible for those choices, and I try to understand, particularly when I see myself overreacting or reacting strongly to Christine or somebody, I'm using that as an opportunity to sort of a mirror to try to understand myself better and then work with that.
Can I make a...
Sure.
I'm still...
Absolutely. Did I not answer your question?
I think so.
You want to go farther?
I want to make a statement and then see what you think.
Okay.
Is what part of, I mean, the way I'm seeing it is part of that process is in the course of human interactions, things come up, like you were talking about reactions.
Yes.
And that's a window into reality, particularly the pain that we've of reality.
Right. Yes.
So trusting God means trusting a God that would actually create a reality in which we suffer.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And so in the course of those relationships, it's seizing that opportunity to have to confront what God's doing in our story.
That's exactly
And what do we
right.
think about it? Is that...
Yeah, and confront actually how I... Am I willing to trust a God who's going to bring that in my... Who's going to put that in my life and have me face that? That's a huge, important question for every single believer to confront, I think.
Could you give an example? I mean, you know, so you can kind of work through it for people?
An example of
conflict and then how you're saying teaching them to grow up or, you know, just...
Sure.
You know.
Can I give an example that I've used before because it just came to my mind? Is that okay? It's an old example. I told you that I'm a Marine Corps brat. It's been a number of years. It's been quite a while ago. I think if I can bring something up that's more recent. I got in a conflict with my daughter last night, but I haven't figured it out yet. So I'm still trying to.
It doesn't have to be personal.
I don't care. I mean, that's personal is fine. I'll talk about the one that happened last night. And maybe I can kind of process this out loud, okay? Sunday we went to Portland. My son is a very good lacrosse player. He's going to his private school up in Beaverton to play lacrosse. And it's a very good school academically. So we went up to visit him. We took our dog with us. And because Jordan, Mrs. Gunner, and what's the same and all that stuff. So, you guys know Leah. My daughter Leah is 14. Speak louder. Okay. I need to speak louder, Chris. Want to give me some voice? Leah is a very precocious 14-year-old going on 18. And I grew up, when I grew up, it was literally yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. There was absolutely no way that I would question anything. I mean, I remember rolling my eyes at my mother one time, and I ended up in the other room on my butt. I mean, that's how it was, okay? So that's what I grew up with. My daughter questions everything. I have a really hard time with it because you're not supposed to do that, right? But she does it. She does everything. She questions everything. So I was asking her. Our dog has this. Our dog's a little bit neurotic, and anytime he's in the back of a pickup truck and kids come up to him, he growls because he's scared. But it looks like he's going to take you on because hair on the back of his neck goes up, and So I told Lee, he did that. He was in the back of our Suburban, and Leah is talking to him, and he's growling because it's night. He's in a confined area. He's scared. He doesn't know what's going on. And she's, from my perspective, antagonizing him. She has this relationship with him. And so I say, hey, Leah, how about just turn around, give him Gunner a break, and leave him alone. It's a real nice thing. And for about 2 minutes, she does that. Then she turns around, and she's right back at him. Because Leah believes, and this is my belief, Leah believes that if I ask her to do something, she's literally going to think about it and decide for herself. And I think that's true. I think that's right. But it so goes against everything I was ever taught. And I'm supposed to do if my father says jump, it's like how high? You understand? I mean, I can't underline this enough. Okay? It's like how high? And is it going to be high enough? And she just, every single step of the way, she is going to decide. She's going to think about it. And it's really good for me, but it drives me nuts. So I react to it. And like Sunday night, I reacted to it. And I just said, Leah, go to bed. Like when we walked in the door. Because she was going to take me on. And I just wasn't going to have it. And then, so the last couple of days, I've been, with the encouragement of Christine and myself, I've been sort of processing that and thinking about, okay. And then yesterday when I took Leah to the Chases, we were talking about that. And I was processing that with her and telling her I was sorry, apologizing to her. But that kind of stuff. I was reacting to my belief that you don't question authority. You just do what you're supposed to do, and that's how you stay out of trouble. Does that make sense? Is that a good example?
And by that, are you saying then that if, when Leah pushes that belief for you, you have a choice to make about...
And it's really hard.
Right.
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah.
It takes a lot of self-control. I mean, I'm...
If you might even say that the choice that you have is, am I going to make it about her...
Yes.
Or am I going
yes.
to
yes.
know the pain that I bring with me?
Exactly. Am
about
I going to make
my
this
own
about
experiences?
Her, or my own belief about what happens if you don't do what you're told. And just my own fear about that. Yeah, exactly. Am I going to make that about me? Or am I going to continue to... Am I going to see her as the problem? And that's the same thing that happens with couples. Huge. You know, and it's not about Leah. It's about me. My reaction to her was about me.
What's a reaction?
What reaction?
What is a reaction?
Well, my heart started beating about 20 beats faster a minute. I started feeling very tense, and I wanted to communicate with her, don't mess with me. You want to take me on? Don't mess with me. I can do this if this is what you want to do. You know, that's the reaction I felt. I mean, I didn't say that to her, but that's kind of what's come building in me. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, I know you guys don't have any idea what that's about. Right? Right? None of you.
Larry, when you've talked about this before, something that was really helpful for me, and as far as understanding, because I can hear you say that and go, oh, my heart never does that, but was when you had kind of like a continuum, you know, like
yes.
a 1 to 10.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And standing behind the car talking to your dog, okay, maybe yeah. that's a 2 or 3. But
yes.
my reaction
yes.
is a 7 or 8, whatever
yeah.
that looks like
yes.
for me. That was really helpful for
okay.
me
I
in understanding.
What Tamara's talking about is on a scale of 1 to 10, my asking my daughter to turn around and leave Gunner alone, and then her not doing that, on a scale of 1 to 10, the big picture, that's like a 2. But my reaction to that was like an 8. And so when you see that kind of disparity, that says, it's not about Leah, it's about you, bud. There's something inside of you that you're responding to. And so the work that I need to do is I need to start looking at that and working with that and taking responsibility. And that's why part of why relationships are so hard. Plus, I'm a sinner and I hurt my daughter. And I have to deal with that. There's a couple of hands in the back. Yeah, go ahead. Just hang on a second.
I was just going to add that in the process of that there are a lot of different ways to react, and my 8 might actually be quiet.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I might disappear rather than get big. I might not even notice it, because my reaction is that I go away and pretend and believe nothing's going on, and I do that really loudly, and I might have to notice that, where did I go yesterday when that happened, because... I don't usually watch quite that much TV.
Well, what I did when I got home, this is true confessions, is I told Christine that I didn't want to talk about it right now, and I went and watched TV. So I went from big to gone. Yeah. And you know, counselors are supposed to have all this stuff together. Don't believe it. It's not true. Yes.
I know that the life maps are dynamic. I mean, they're always changing. But when you're in a relationship for a long time, you kind of get into patterns of interacting with each other.
Yeah, I call it a dance.
In the last couple of years, my beliefs and fears have been challenged a lot.
Yes.
And I have changed a great deal in the last 2 years. I feel like a different person than I was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I'm single, and so that's not affecting... a relationship on a day-to-day basis, but would you address that when one person makes a lot of changes, positive or negative, and how that goes into the mix of the relationship?
Well, I think when you're single, I mean, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying you haven't made changes. So I don't know. And that's great. I think when you're single, though, it's harder to see. We don't have the experience or the opportunity where somebody's holding a mirror up for us to see. You know, I've worked really hard at, I believe in this process that I'm talking about, and I work pretty hard at it. I work with Christine with it, and she works with me with it. I work with my kids with it, and Sunday night I was right there. And I believe in being a kind, loving, compassionate person. I value that. And I think that there are situations that I was tired. I'd had a long weekend. I'd been writing a paper for 3 weeks. Presented a paper. I was exhausted. Part of it was just the stress level and being tired, and that's part of it too. But also there is this thing that I needed, that I was reacting to inside of me. So I just think it really takes being in a relationship to see some of the stuff that God wants us to see, and He uses relationships for that purpose. Okay. Margie, did you have your hand raised?
I did.
Okay, I'll get back in a second, okay? Yeah, go ahead, Catherine.
I want to know if you'd talk about the mirror thing a little bit more, because I want to know if, I know that I'm able to see certain things about myself, but unless the other person who is that mirror is the arena, the mirror, or because I guess I'm wanting to know about some boundaries for confronting, you know.
Well, I think that really depends on the relationship.
Yeah.
And,
some relationships where people. Sometimes we need our friends or others to tell us something that we don't see.
Yeah.
And if there's a person that doesn't ever take that step, even if it's what the Lord may call them to do, then how would they be instrumental in someone else's life in that regard?
I mean, I suspect that Christians in community need to do that more than they do it. But they need to be really careful about how they do it. I don't think we do it enough.
I mean, I think sometimes we get into that mode of going, well, God's going to fix them eventually anyway, so yeah. I'll just pray for them and let him take care of it.
Yeah. When, yeah, most of us are into avoiding conflict. And telling someone that they've been hurtful or they've done something is taking a risk of having some conflict. So I think that's part of why we don't do that. Yes. Sure.
This question a little bit more about changing.
Yes.
And maybe just talk for a minute about it seems to me that the changes that happen have to do with the perspective that we gain on who we are and what we bring.
Yes, yes.
It might not be that, and so in that sense, my fears and beliefs can be challenged and can be changed on a certain level because I'm more aware of my reactions, and I might be able to preempt a particular volume to a reaction if I'm aware of where my vulnerability is in that area.
Right.
But like you, it also might be that it's going to catch me by surprise, and it's just going to happen.
Yes.
And kind of facing into who I am and what I bring in the context of any kind of relationship and be doing that honestly.
And what I learn about myself is the change or learning about how I responded to that and my need for mercy and seeing my choices as really being hurtful rather than not. And that process is where the change happens.
Yeah, so I might say that there are ways in which I change really dramatically, and there are also ways in which I don't change. So I don't know if that addresses more kind of what you
Tucker?
Were.
I wanted to address the issue, or want you to talk about the issue of, we've got these maps going on, these grids that we're working through that are complicated and dynamic, and they're happening all the time. And when you are interacting with your daughter and you both are acting out of your grids and you end up with a kind of interaction or a situation which you then later start thinking about that and you call that you process that that when you're going through that activity, that process, it's not like you have stepped out of your grid and said, now I'm going to be neutral and I'm going to just process this, or I'm going to be purely logical or whatever. I mean, you bring yourself into that process.
That's
and
true.
I think the next step is, or the next thing I'd say to that is, that's one of the reasons why even when you are trying to get to that process, that in and of itself can be one of the most difficult and painful things that you ever do.
It is. It's very difficult. It's not something that we do naturally very well.
I was wondering what your perspective would be as far as someone purposefully trying to and succeeding in hurting another. Is the person who is hurt by the first one, or is that still, was that first person still not responsible for this other, how this second person reacts? Or what's your take on that?
Is person B responsible for person A? Is that your
question? Is the hurter responsible for the hurtee?
Is the person who, let's say if Tim hurts me, let's get it out of the abstract here, and maybe we'll talk about real life. Let's say I hurt Tim, okay, in some way, okay, and your question is
hurt him.
If I purposely hurt him.
Yes.
Or even try to hurt him. Okay. If I hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
The question is,
if you purposely hurt him.
Correct.
Okay. What I've
where's
been
the responsibility
getting,
lie?
Yeah, what I've been getting is that one is not responsible for the way another responds.
Right.
Yes. So I'm wondering what your perspective on this is.
My perspective is that I'm responsible for my actions, my motives, my decisions, and that Tim is responsible for his. response to me. I'm responsible for having hurt him and caused him pain. Now he has a decision to make. Is he going to take responsibility for that? Is he going to be a victim? How's he going to respond? Is he going to take revenge? Is he going to understand that God is sovereign and that God has brought this in his life for him to respond to responsibly? That's my perspective.
So about what he was saying, I think that's a really good question. And like, there's a difference between like person B, the hurt.
Let's
person.
Keep it to
Tim
and I.
Tim, right.
So it's out of the abstract.
Tim may be responsible for his response, but
yeah,
it's not his fault that he was hurt.
Correct.
And I think that's a really important distinction.
Yes, it is.
And I think that it's really helpful if for you to see how hurt he's been.
Absolutely.
And I think that can be, I mean,
absolutely,
a really helpful
sure.
thing.
Can I yeah.
follow up on that?
Hang on, Margie.
Thank you, because I'm wondering how to approach this subject. It's not so easy.
Okay. Well, let's say Tim is hurt.
Yes.
To the point where Tim can see that he's bitter. Tim can see that he's angry.
Mm-hmm.
Tim can see that he is withdrawing for the sake of using the defense
okay.
mechanism
okay.
of withdrawal
sure.
just to keep peace.
Okay.
Tim then says to you, I'm withdrawing because I'm bitter and I'm hurt and there ain't a dang thing I can do about it. And you respond with, but that is your problem. Why are you like that? I thought you were supposed to be a Christian.
Oh, you got an hour?
Where? No, just something general, anything. Point me to...
Well, that's you've asked a complex question. Here, I'm going to grab this. first of all, I'm not sure I would be the person to talk to Tim, having been the one who hurt him. I'm not sure I have an audience with him, number one. I hope that he would go to talk to somebody else and who could give him some perspective and help him see that he, on some level, is making decisions about what he does with the fact that I've hurt him. And that he could see that he's responsible for his choices, and can he trust a God who's going to have Larry hurt him? And what is he going to do with that? And is he going to be a person who's going to trust God for mercy because he sees his need for mercy and give me mercy? Is he going to get angry and revengeful? Or are he going to withdraw? What's he going to do? It's important that he sees that he has a choice to make and that he's responsible for those choices. And that's, if someone came to me, that's what I would try to help them see. Now, I would be certainly understand that they've been hurt, and certainly it's human, and I can understand that part of humanity that wants to get revenge, because I'm a human myself, and I've certainly, I have taken revenge before. I know what that's about. So I'm not in a position to judge Tim, but I am certainly a person to come alongside and say, Tim, I understand, and you've got a decision to make here, and what are you going to do? How are you going to trust God with this? What do you want? What kind of person do you want to be? What kind of person are you committed to being? And I'll walk alongside you with this. But not if you are a Christian. No, not going to do that.
Well, been through that.
Yes, a lot of people have been through that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I'm back to the situation with your daughter.
Yes.
And I'm wondering...
Please know that
I
care deeply about my daughter.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
But God has given me a daughter who's who she is.
Yes.
For me to
right.
deal with my stuff.
Well, is she's responsible then for how she... she is towards you, whether
sure.
she's respectful or whether
yes.
she's
yes, she is. She's not responsible. Well,
I mean, it's not all your fault that you were reacting. I mean,
well,
not that it's a fault, but
I'm responsible for how I reacted.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. She's not. Now, she made a decision not to do what I asked her to do,
mm-hmm.
and she's responsible for that, I think.
So how do you help her to be responsible for her part?
I go back to her and I apologize to her for my being irresponsible,
mm-hmm.
and ask her to forgive me and model what it means to take responsibility for myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I also, when she's disrespectful, I give her appropriate consequences, because my job as a parent is, I need to remember this, is sometimes I forget that my job as a parent is not to get my child to do what I want them to do. My job as a parent is to teach my children about reality. And reality is that they're decision makers and that they're responsible for their choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't make them do what I want them to do. I have to, part of what I have to trust God for is trying to train my children and try to do the best I can, and they're responsible for their choices and I'm not in control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really hard thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because they can do things that can hurt them, that I wouldn't do, that I wouldn't want them to do, and I have to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in control. Jonathan back there first, and then we'll work up. Oh, Tim's been picked on. Just this, one more. I'm really sorry, Tim.
I guess I'm the token hurting guy tonight, so I'll take that on. I mean, I have been hurt often by you, Larry, and I just want to know. Thought we'd have a public. So no. I think, and I like your feedback on this. In my life, there's been tremendous benefit from being hurt intentionally by others. I mean, I've been in close relationships where I've just been intentionally kind of just, and it really, if you take kind of the approach that you talk about taking responsibility for yourself, those kinds of injuries really expose your belief system.
Yes, they do.
You know, and I had a belief system about if I do everything right, then people will like me.
Well, I had, like what I was talking about earlier, I had a belief that if I worked hard, I was kind to people, then they ought to respond in a kind way back. Well, that kind of breaks down, you know, me being a sinner and there being a sinner.
Well, we're right. And I thought, well, if I'm truthful and I'm kind and I do everything right, then this person will like me.
Yeah.
And I discovered through the rejection that, well, people like me because they like me and people don't like me because they don't like me. And I discovered my fear about, oh, I'm not supposed to have any enemies. Everybody's supposed to be my buddy, and I'm supposed to, you know, be compliant and make everybody like me. It's like,
yeah.
I'm not supposed to. And without the benefit of the suffering of those kinds of injuries,
yes.
You're never confronted with those fears. You're just kind of
going around it
just all the time.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah. And that's really not trusting God, for maybe He wants you to suffer.
Right. And I think that's what trusting God means.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Could you pass this back to Jonathan, please? We've got about 6 minutes or so, or about that. Are we being punctual? Okay, we're being punctual.
I was curious, do you think Christians need to be married by the church? And if so, do you think the church can refuse?
Say that. Do I think Christians need to be married by the church?
Do you think Christians need to be married by the church? And if so, do you think the church can refuse? Or do you... maybe one way of getting into this is maybe addressing the public or the Christian, maybe ecclesiastical character of marriage, both before and after.
Oh, gosh, that's kind of... What if you and I were to talk about this afterwards? I mean, it's kind of taken in a different direction. I can say that I've had people ask me to marry him, and I've said, no, I can't. But let's talk about that afterwards, because it's kind of taken in a different direction. Zach, you got the mic, man.
My question is, in the beginning, you've talked about kind of coming to grips with the reality that God may have made us to suffer, and that could be the reality that we live in.
Yes.
I guess the part, like the question I have is, how does, I mean, like, I understand, you know, like, really being conscientious of the baggage that you brought with you through life and
right.
the way that that is, like, conflicting with other people's baggage
sure.
plus innate and this sort of thing.
Right.
How does it work? I mean, I guess what is the reaction to trusting God in suffering? I mean, how do we react to that? What do we do?
How do we trust God?
No, how do we trust God in that suffering is for our benefit?
Well, I mean, kind of like, what does it look like?
Yeah, yeah. What okay. does it What does it look like? I mean,
okay.
I mean, in a sense, it's like I know this isn't exactly what you're doing, but
yeah.
it seems like we're kind of. I mean, forgive me if I misunderstood, but it seems like we're kind of trying to come to grips with our suffering
right.
in a way of making it all better.
I don't think I want to make it all better. I think I just want to face into what's true.
Okay.
That's what I want to do. And if I'm facing into what's true, then I'm going to have to look at myself and understand the choices that I've made is in fact my choice. Am I being honest with myself about what's true? Am I being honest with myself about what it is inside of me that I'm responding to? Am I making you the problem rather than really looking at what I'm responding to? I think that's... I have to face into the question, does God have a right to have someone hurt me? Does God have a right to have someone hurt me?
Right.
Or to live in a world where people can hurt me? Does God have a right to do that? That's how I trust God, is to face into those questions and face into honest with myself about my reactions. That's how I trust God. Terry? This will be the last question. Or, let's see.
Second to last question. In what you've said tonight, a person could walk away thinking, using the example of Leah,
yeah.
your daughter Leah,
mm-hmm.
a person could walk away thinking that anger is always inappropriate, that that's a sign of right. overreacting. Is there such thing as righteous anger
sure.
or appropriate anger?
Sure, absolutely. But
so, as a response.
I was talking about anger when I was talking about Leah. I'm talking about anger that's motivated by my own fear, that comes out of rather than being experiencing the fear, I got big instead. And it's a much less uncomfortable emotion to experience myself as being angry than it is to experience myself being afraid or experiencing pain. So that's what people often do, is go to bigness, or they leave, or they do lots of other things instead of just experiencing that. I think there's anger when there's injustice, and you can be angry about that. Or I think we have to be really careful and be willing to examine our anger and whether it is in fact about justice or about some wrong that's being committed, that kind of thing. I mean, I think we always have to sort of question our motives and not just assume that just because we're angry about something that's wrong that it's necessarily a good thing. But I certainly would think that it's possible to be angry for a good reason. Let Dan ask his last question here.
In a marriage relationship, when you have people that are understanding they have a grid, and you have a spouse that's understanding that they have a grid,
mm-hmm.
and the thing that Tim is talking about being intentionally hurt, one of the things about each of you living with your grids and the other person knowing your grid and knowing where your tender
yeah.
spots are
mm-hmm.
is a real hotbed, real fertile ground for damage.
Yes.
But also in the taking it up just a notch higher, the understanding your partner's grid and what mm-hmm. is they're sensitive to
yes.
is taking the relationship even further into more intimate relationship.
Correct.
Where you can be sensitive to the way you can present an argument, the way you can explain something. And that's, when we talk about complicated, that's... Yeah.
Can you imagine being a counselor and being married to a very perceptive counselor? So take it out there a little farther.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's a lot of potential there to go one way or the other quickly. Yep. You guys have been great. You've had great questions. And thank you very much.